So welcome to the Data Centric Podcast, where we talk about all things data centric. I'm Steve McDowell, Senior Analyst at More Insights and Strategy, and I'm here with
Matt Kimball, also a Senior Analyst at More Insights and Strategy.
Awesome. Welcome, Matt.
Will you stop laughing?
I'm not sure I can.
I think those brownies may have impacted your, never mind.
Lots of news. So yeah. Amazon reInvent. So we're recording this the last week in November, 2018, and Amazon reInvent just wrapped up, right? Mm-hmm. And overloaded the entire world with news. And HPE Discover Madrid also just wrapped up.
Yeah. Yeah. Which one do you want to start with? AWS reInvent, or you want to start with?
Oh, no. Let's talk about AWS reInvent, because they are dominating the world, man. They're going to do to data center what they did to small town retail, I think, and kill everybody. Let's talk about AWS first, Matt.
It feels that way, though, doesn't it?
It does. Well, let's start at the top, right? So they made a lot of announcements. I'll just ring off a few that are in my head, and then you can jump in, right? Bold move, right, to massive vertical integration. They're doing their own semiconductors. They have an mm-hmm. ARM server chip. They are moving on-prem, pushing from the cloud downward into the data center with their own custom-designed mm-hmm. hardware. Then there was a slew of AI stuff that I don't understand or even want to pretend to understand. But it appears to me that, you know, they're taking the cloud model, which is disrupted data center, and they're trying to do the same thing in artificial intelligence with AI as a service, right, across the board.
Had you mentioned Outpost? I stopped listening to you after about 15 seconds there, as I usually do. But the Outpost announcement as well, right, which brings that cloud environment down to the local data center, which is equally fascinating.
I mentioned that. I didn't call it Outpost.
So, but this is, to what you were saying, this is where the, you know, the true Amazon model of, you know, kind of, you know, you equated it to killing all the local retailers on Main Street. But this is a really, number one, it's an interesting approach they've taken, but it really does. If I were HPE, Dell, Cisco, Lenovo, it causes me to stand up and take notice of what they're doing here, because this becomes a more direct threat to my business model.
Oh, sure it does, right? I mean, you know, all of the tier one world is focused on, I think, A, they recognize the reality of hybrid cloud in the mm-hmm. data center. And all of the, you know, tier one guys and the software guys around them are saying, how can I bridge over to Amazon, right? And Amazon just completely disrupted that with Outposts by saying, you don't have to, we're going to bring it to you. And oh, by the way, if you're in a VMware environment, we got VMware support right here on-prem on our hardware. So, you know, I think VMware is going to be a huge winner in this model.
Yeah, I agree. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out in the long run. You know, I think about these enterprise companies, enterprise IT organizations that have these kind of deep relationships with the, you know, your traditional OEM partners. And I still struggle a little bit with seeing Amazon disrupting that relationship. So that's the other side of it, right? I mean, I can certainly see if I were still in IT and I were, you know, IT director and looking to number one, simplify my life, and number two, make that hybrid cloud truly hybrid and truly seamless in my organization, this almost seems like a no-brainer. But the other side to that is, you know, I've made some serious investments with my traditional OEM partners and the software ecosystem that is supporting my organization. And now I'm going to, enterprise IT is a slow moving marketplace. These guys are not risk takers. They kind of go with what they know and what's proven and what's not broken. And while Amazon has proven to be, you know, obviously a safe choice for cloud, there are a couple of things in there, right? Number one, they haven't done the on-prem thing yet. And number two, some of the cost, you know, these you hear about repatriation from cloud because of the, you know, the unanticipated unexpected cost associated with cloud. make me wonder, does that make enterprise IT a little bit slower to adopt or to even consider?
Oh yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. And I think what Amazon did here, right, is they looked at what are the inhibitors to people bringing all their stuff fully over to the Amazon world, right? And they're addressing that. But if you look at, I mean, to your point, right, there's an existing infrastructure in the data center that doesn't want to be disrupted. And I had the same thoughts when I was thinking about, IBM also made, not IBM, Amazon also made some storage announcements, right? They're bringing some higher level file services for Lustre FS and Windows file services up, right? And that's a space that's traditionally been served by other people. But what I think about in both of these cases are, it's really for IT going to be a better together story. And it's going to be what scales from my existing environment up and out. So I think the Amazon play, you know, it makes a lot of sense for some customers, but they're playing the long game, right? Nobody, when they started AWS, you know, a decade ago, people had the same conversation. IT's slow, they're not going to embrace it. And then within a decade, here we are. So, you know, Jeff Bezos is, you know.
Yeah, you know, I hear you.
Not a dumb guy. And I think he's looking at the long game saying, I want to be the utility compute for everybody. How do I do that? And he's laying the groundwork, I think, for the long game. I think in the short term, you know, this is going to cause a messaging marketing problem for the OEMs, but it's not going to impact their revenue in the, you know, 3 to 5
years. I would agree with you 100% on that. I think you're right. I mean, the long game is certainly where Amazon seems to be focused. And to what you're saying, long term, once they kind of find that those couple of unicorns that adopt and kind of stand this thing up, you know, I guess you could almost call it the killer app, if you will. You'll start to see organizations follow suit. But it certainly be a little bit longer term. It'll be interesting to see what Amazon does from an edge perspective as well. So, and when I think about edge, I'm thinking specifically, you know, IIoT, the industrialized world, where, you know, you've got shop floors, factory floors, that both HPE, Dell, I shouldn't say both, but HPE, Dell, Lenovo, you know, all of the OEMs are chasing after pretty hard. Be curious to see if Amazon kind of goes after a traditional data center, core data center first, and then starts to look at doing these micro data centers that can reside out in the wild, or if they start attacking that pretty quickly, kind of in parallel with their data center approach. Because I think, you know, because edge is on the front of everybody's brain, I think it's a, you know, you're almost not well served to at least talk about it now if you're Amazon. You've got to come up with some story.
Wait. So, you know, what's interesting though, is they didn't use the word edge, but they talked about a lot of technologies that are directly applicable, right? They rolled out a new database. It's, I forget what they called it, but it's a time series database, right? So it's all about collecting data points from IoT type devices, right? If you look at how they're doing AI, they announced one of the cool things, right, is this developer kit for autonomous cars, right? Where they give you this little radio controlled car, that's got an x86 built in, but all the processing is sent back to some of their stateless instances that run up in the cloud, right, to churn on and sends back down to the car. They did a similar thing a few months ago with this deep lens camera. I actually bought one and played with it. So they're building all of this infrastructure that's designed for this kind of high latency time series, kind of, you know, edgy stuff. I don't know that they figured out how to package that yet into a solution that they can call, you know, Edge, AWS. But they're putting the pieces.
Yeah, I'm sure they are. One of the things you hit on there, though, and we should kind of keep in mind is, I mean, you talk about things like autonomous car. There is no ability to wait for data to be sent up to a cloud instance, be transformed, analyzed, and turned into, you know, actionable intelligence, and then sent back down to the car. Right? I mean,
I don't think that's their target. I think their target are the researchers working on this, so that you can have a small development platform. I don't have to go build a a giant instrumented car necessarily to work on these algorithms. But my point there was, is they're laying the infrastructure for that kind of data to flow back and forth. And that's a natural edge.
You know, I think what's really, strangely enough, what is maybe the most interesting thing to me that came out of reInvent was, you hit it at the top of the discussion, was the fact that ARM went out and developed their very own CPU, right? ARM-based CPU to power some of their lower end, and I think they might claim not just lower end, AWS instances. Man, what a validation for ARM after years of fits and starts. I mean, this to me is the big coming out party, right? And I don't think you could have asked for, if you're ARM, I don't think you could have asked for a bigger and better coming out party. They were the belle of the ball for sure.
Oh yeah, it was fantastic validation, and I think the other guys that are looking at ARM in the server, right, are going to point directly toward that. It's great validation for ARM, and I think they're targeting this. I think the language they used were interpretive language programs, which makes a lot of sense because then you don't have all of the burden of cross compiling and doing those sorts of things, right? So if you have Python, kind of standard back end stack stuff that's interpretive in nature, should just drop ARM. Now, you know, I think over the coming weeks we'll see people actually testing this and seeing what the numbers are, because there's a lot more to a processor than just single thread of performance. So it'll be interesting to see. But I think for a lot of workloads, it's going to make a lot of sense. And if I were an Amazon investor, I would look at this and say, "Wow, right? I mean, by building their own chip, that says." What was I going to say? By building their own chip, that takes a lot of the cost structure out, right? So they're not giving margin to a supplier.
Talk about a vertically integrated stack, right? I think what I'm curious to see in all of this is how this plays. You know, so ARM did their Neoverse announcement back at TechCon in October, and kind of look, we're serious about data center cores, high performant cores that are, still power efficient, and talk about kind of enabling the ecosystem and, kind of building this ARM ecosystem in the data center. Now, what's interesting to me, and I wonder if this can almost have somewhat of an adverse effect on the whole ARM announcement. I don't believe it will, but, so here you are, and rather than AWS going to a Qualcomm or a Cavium or some of these other players, they decide to build their own part, which means, their software stack is going to be optimized for that part that they built, right, as much as possible. So it makes me wonder if, in a way, this makes that ARM market for the data center or the data center market for ARM a little bit more fragmented than maybe ARM would like. Because ideally, you want a few suppliers that are putting out parts that are being adopted broadly, not everybody building their own.
So ARM makes their money off of licensing. So I don't know that ARM's going to care. I do think that this strengthens greatly the ability to deploy ARM in the data center, because what Amazon's doing, and this is all open source stuff running on ARM, right, is they're going to beef up and data center proof, if you will, kind of the software stack for Linux that supports ARM. From that perspective, I think it's going to be fantastic, because if you look at the work that's been done for the ARM software ecosystem, ARM has largely existed in kind of the IoT and mobile space. And for Amazon to go deploy this in their cloud means that they're going to go for the handful of Linuxes they're supporting, are going to be data center ready, if you will, for ARM. And I think that the players that you just mentioned are going to take that software and exploit it. And I think it's
I hear you. And I don't disagree with you at all. The only kind of area I'm curious about is, and I understand, the kind of notion of, look, ARM is getting a royalty on every single CPU that's being deployed in AWS. So do they care either way? I think going back to the longer term vision, if your goal, as a provider is to be able to, get a good footprint in the enterprise data center, not just the cloud, does this kind of get you closer to that? And maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. I would have to think that, you know, seeing if Cavium or a Qualcomm or some of these other players see what AWS is doing, they can look at this a couple of different ways. One is they can kind of look at it and go, well, game, set, match, you know, we don't have an opportunity to sell into these guys. And if Amazon is doing it, how long before Microsoft does it? And, you know, we know Google's doing stuff and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Or they can say, you know what, there's room for innovation here because, you know, Amazon doesn't have, or AWS doesn't have the resources to truly kind of, you know, to build something that's truly differentiated. So maybe this motivates them to be, I don't know, maybe motivates them to be a little bit more creative in what they're building, designing, building, and deploying out there.
Yeah, I think so. I think what this is going to do, though, and this is going to be good for the Caviums and the guys you mentioned, in that, you know, we've been talking about ARM in the data center for almost a decade, mm-hmm. right? About 8 years. And the question always comes down to, you know, what workloads are best for that? And if you deploy this on the cloud where people can go run very cheap experiments, this stuff's a nickel an hour for their mid instance, I think.
Yeah.
You're going to get a lot of validation of workloads, and that's going to become the playground to say what makes sense and what doesn't make sense. And all of that can only serve to help the guys trying to push ARM into the data center. So, A, it's going to give them credibility. If I'm an IT architect, right, am I betting on a new architecture that's disruptive? Now I can say, well, you know what? Amazon's rolling it out. It must be good. The software is going to mature rapidly. And then we're going to get a lot of proof points around performance and what workloads make sense as people go and deploy. That makes sense. So the cloud world, right? These are fast followers. Everything Amazon does, Google and Microsoft turn around and, mm-hmm. and you know, do the next day, if you will, right? Are we going to see, does this open the door for the Caviums and the other guys to drive ARM into the hyperscale?
Oh, I would think so, wouldn't you? I mean, you know, so Microsoft announced some time back, right, that they were working with Qualcomm with their Centriq product to qualify and deploy within Azure. They never talked about the scale. They never talked about anything in real terms, workload affinity, anything like that. But they, you know, they were at the Centriq launch and they talked about what was interesting to them. There were a couple of Chinese hyperscalers that were also at the launch that talked about what they were looking to do with Qualcomm. And, you know, as you know, Huawei has an ARM part as well. So I think the fast follower, you could almost argue, well, I wouldn't argue that one fast followed the other, but, you know, these guys have all been kind of running in parallel for some time.
I get it. Let's switch gears, man. HPE had, what's their event called? Discover in Madrid this week. Neither of us went.
No, I was a little bit disappointed. How about you?
I was extremely disappointed because I like Madrid and it would have gotten me out of a Thanksgiving trip with the family.
You're supposed to say I was really excited because I wanted to hear what was new and interesting from HPE. But thank you for your naked truth. But true. So the, true story.
So the big themes, I picked up a couple because, you know, as analysts, we were pre-briefed on most of the announcements they made. Mm-hmm. So nothing was a surprise to us. But on the storage front, they simplified their storage portfolio. Right now, they're clearly stating where, you know, Nimble and 3PAR play. They brought some fresh updates to those lines. I think HPE was the last company that had NVMe in their storage arrays, and they're addressing that with 3PAR. And if you listen to, you know, HPE's discussion of that, they're not just bringing NVMe into the box. They're also the first storage company that's using server class memory. So they're taking these byte addressable Intel Optane parts, putting them in a PCIe slot, and using them for caching that they say just, you know, should blow away the competition. We'll look at the numbers and figure that out. So a lot of stuff around storage. And then they continue down this path of composable infrastructure.
Yeah. The composable infrastructure announcement I thought was really interesting. And The reason I say that is, so before we go too far right on that, let's define what they mean by composable cloud. Composable infrastructure, composable cloud. What they've done is, as you know, is they've taken a lot of their composability software stack. So OneView, OpenView, OneSphere, GreenLake. They've taken this, they've integrated their unified API. They've taken InfoSight that they acquired through the Nimble acquisition, integrated it, started to integrate it into the stack, and they've started to take this and expand the support for this composable cloud software from just their Synergy hardware platform over mm-hmm. to their DL rack servers as well, which to me, I talk about this, I was talking to the press about this the other day, and it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like cloud for the masses, right? Hybrid cloud for the masses. So it simplifies, it allows you to take advantage of existing infrastructure a lot more easily. And what I like about it, in addition to not having to go buy specific or, you know, kind of, I hate to say proprietary, but proprietary hardware to stand up this hybrid cloud environment, you can put this on, you know, their Gen 10 DL380 without a problem. Point Next will probably help you do that a little bit, but it brings that capability to the masses, and it simplifies that kind of the biggest, you know, barrier to adoption of cloud, which is how do I deploy this thing and how do I manage it? It simplifies all of that and takes all of that headache away for enterprise IT. And, you know, it's funny because you and I have worked together for a long time, and, you know, you've heard as much as I have kind of this, all of these use cases and case studies around, you know, private clouds being deployed in the enterprise and self-service portals and how wonderful it is and, you know, how great it is. But what fails to get called out is there are very few enterprises that are fully deploying these private and hybrid cloud environments. And it's a big headache getting these deployed in the first place, right? And that's always been the barrier to adoption. So, you know, what I really am excited about, maybe excitement's a strong word, but I'm kind of curious to see how this plays out. And I think it's going to play out well for them is, you know, to watch how the adoption of hybrid cloud and private cloud in a true sense expands beyond those enterprises that, you know, are way advanced from a capability maturity perspective. You know, talk about cloud for the masses, cloud for Main Street, right? I really think this is going to open up that addressable market, especially with the support of from Point Next. So I'll be kind of curious to see how this plays out for them.
Yeah, and I think you're right. And it goes back to how we were talking about Amazon before, right? IT, very conservative, and they want to push into hybrid cloud and cloud using what they know and what they're comfortable with. And you know, HPE has a giant footprint there, as does Dell EMC, and they're doing similar things. Mm-hmm. And we see similar announcements from their events.
Yeah.
And you know, it should be pointed out, right? We all like to talk about cloud and hybrid cloud, because they're cool new technologies, mm-hmm. but the actual adoption rates, you know, quantitatively are probably fairly low, but it's easy to get caught up in the, you know, every quarter we do the, you know, it's easy to have 100% growth when you have a small market.
Right.
Right. So, you know, it's the model of the future. It's where we're going. But there's not, you know, nobody dominates that space today, and there's not one accepted set of practices. So I look at the things that we're doing with composable infrastructure and even some of the stuff coming out of Nutanix Next this week. Yeah. You know, we're going to try a lot of things mm-hmm. before we figure out where it all lands and makes sense. And yeah, I think it's all good for the industry.
Yeah, and to what you're saying, I couldn't agree more. And I think as maybe wary as the market is to cloud and, you know, all the hyperbole around it, we forget, you hit it on the head. From an adoption perspective, we're still kind of on the leading edge, right? And so you're right. I mean, this market is going to shake out, and they're all playing. You know, HPE made some really interesting announcements. I think the DL stuff is really cool. But you're right. Dell is playing. Dell EMC, Dell Technologies is playing in the space as well. Lenovo is starting to has started to establish their voice. You know, Cisco would claim they've long been in this space. So you know, everybody's going after it. And 5 years from now, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what this market looks like. I don't think it's going to be a CI versus HCI versus cloud versus edge. This is, to me, this is the first step to autonomous compute, right? Take a box, plug it in, put a cable in it, and it self-provisions, self-deploys, self-monitors, self-manages, and in away you go. And IT...
It's what we've been talking about since we've been in this industry, right? The holy grail of IT is give me one pane of glass where I can drag and drop my infrastructure, whether you want to call that composable or data fabric or any of the words you just used.
Yeah.
And let's put some intelligence in there, because it is, you know, the number of variables and factors are a little too overwhelming for, you know, humans to maybe understand all the time. And that's why tools like InfoSight, which HPE announced they're bringing across their line, are valuable, right? And Dell has similar tools.
So, you know, being an ex-Nimble guy like yourself, right? I mean, how do you see InfoSight as a kind of a key differentiator, and kind of where it is today and where you think it's going to go in the next, you know, next few quarters?
Yeah. So I think InfoSight is sitting, smack in the middle of its evolutionary curve. I look at InfoSight as an enabling set of technologies for HPE, right? I mean, what InfoSight does well is it looks at, telemetry, if you will, from all your deployed systems. Yeah. And tries to draw conclusions from that and makes recommendations, whether that's around, predictive failure and predictive analytics, or they're talking a lot this week around predictive sizing and workload analysis. As they deploy that kind of AI into the data center and across, well, you know, from storage up into servers and then across into networking ultimately, right? Mm-hmm. It becomes, I think, a key enabler for whatever their management tool ends up being. You know, I don't like still that it's segregated from their other management tools, yeah. But I think that's a short-term problem for them. I mean, they acquired Nimble just over a year ago. That's not a lot of time for a software group to make a lot of progress. And in that time they have, you know, put it on several other platforms. So I think ultimately it converges with whatever their management tool is and becomes kind of the AI, I think the new the marketing term they're using this week is AI ops, yeah. Right? So InfoSight enables AI ops, and InfoSight becomes their AI engine. Mm-hmm. And I think you'll see that exposed through OpenView and their other tools, right? And I don't remember the name of their composable infrastructure management kind of suite, but I think it's going to plug right into that.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head too. And it's I see this with most of the players out there. You know, HPE has a compelling story and vision. Dell Technologies is equally compelling and interesting. Lenovo, they all do. But to what you're saying, you know, these management suites that are driving kind of end to end in the infrastructure, right? From kind of baseboard management controllers on the motherboard, all the way up to managing the application stacks. They're still very segregated. And point products. The key, and I think what's going to differentiate one company from another, and I'm certainly not saying one's going to be a winner and the other is not, but I think what's really going to kind of differentiate companies moving forward is the ability, that level of integration that exists between all of these point products, and the amount of autonomy this provides or delivers to that data center, right? The more I can, never mind just the single pane of glass, not even having to look at a pane of glass is really where I want to get to.
Yeah, well, you know, yeah. And I think that there's some antibodies in IT. I think we could do a whole show just on talking about the autonomous data center, and we should. Because as you said, I think all the OEMs are delivering something in this space. Dell is saying they're doing AI in the box. Anyway.
But maybe we'll do that in another show. But talk to me. I mean, what are your thoughts? It's one of the more interesting and maybe not as highly public announcements made from HPE at Discover was around their converged edge and what they're doing from a hardware product, software, and software product perspective to to kind of separate themselves in the marketplace. Have you looked at that at all? Or
I've looked at it, and I think it was a bold, and they did this at their U.S. version of their U.S. show over the summer, right? They said, we're investing, was it $4 billion over 4 years for Edge? And I think, you know, they're taking the right approach. Edge isn't, ultimately, Edge is a lot of endpoints that are collapsing in. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, Edge is a data center, right? Yes. For Edge to be successful and IoT to be successful, it has to be able to work with or without the network. And that means that I need compute and storage and capabilities, you know, close to the endpoints. Yes. So it ultimately becomes an extremely tiered architecture from the devices you have out there, whether there's security cameras or smart cars or smart buildings or, you know, whatever, feeding a fairly local small data center that is based on this new these new form factors from HPE. And then, you know, a smart way of getting that data back up to the data center and then maybe ultimately into the cloud, or maybe into the cloud first and then down into the data center, I think is how IBM or Amazon would like to see
that. Yeah, you know, it's interesting because the both HPE and Dell have taken a, I think, a smart approach to this in that, you know, it's kind of a crawl, walk, run. First thing they both seem to do was build the hardware that can reside and operate in all of those extreme conditions that make up the edge, right? Whether it's an oil rig, a cell tower, or, you know, water treatment plant or a factory floor, they've built out these ruggedized platforms with the necessary certifications. And that's good, right? So that's the kind of the crawl part of this. And they both, I think, have very compelling hardware platforms that play in that. HPE, I'm only hitting on them versus Dell because they just made these announcements. You know, their three platforms are the EdgeLine 300, 1000, and 4000. So one's a wall mount, and then the other two are rack. I call them rack form factors, but they have, it looks like they have what were the old moonshot cartridges that provide the compute, but lots of data center level compute at the edge to provide that real time analysis and all that neat stuff. But what's more interesting to me is moving, kind of evolving from crawl to walk and maybe even to some degree run. And that is having the interpretive software, translation software that takes all of that raw data from a valve, from a sensor, from an assembly line, and all the sensors that sit on that assembly line, and feeding it into this interpreter that can take that and turn it into data that can be ingested and analyzed from an analytics tool, an SAP HANA or some other analytics tool that allows for real-time analysis to take place at the edge. So it's not even necessarily the network has to be there, or you can't rely on the network being there. In most cases, at least in these industrial environments, you're relying on the network not being there, right? Because this stuff has to be done, executed locally. This analysis and corrective action has to be executed locally. Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
No, I was going to say, sure, right. And beyond the form factor, because we've been building industrial PCs, and now we're building, I mean, essentially what we're doing are building industrial servers. Mm-hmm. But not only do we have to rely on or build for the network not being there, we have to build for IT not being
yes.
there. Yes. And I think that's where these guys are going to learn from what they've done with HCI, right? And different kinds of converged infrastructure to make something that is, you know, an appliance,
yeah.
Regardless of the data, just from a how does IT manage it perspective. They have to appliantize these things and provide seamless integration back into my management suite, whatever that
well,
is.
Well, you're right, right? Because that's the thing I think a lot of organizations overlook. You know, as you're looking at deploying an edge strategy, and this could be a separate show as well or separate podcast as well, but, you know, one of the things you have to consider is it's a cultural organization consideration, and it has to be one of the first things you think about, and that is, you've got an IT organization, very technical. You know, we all wear pocket protectors. We're kind of nerdy, and we think we're smarter than everybody else. Well, sitting out on that shop floor or that treatment plant is an OT organization, operational technology organization, equally geeky, equally smart, right? But they're managing systems that are, you know, like IT, but they're also proprietary. So there's a you have to bridge these two organizations if you're truly going to be effective. Because number one, IT and HPE announced some instrumentation that allows you to manage their edge line stuff from the core data center. But there's always going to be that time where you have to send that, you know, that plant engineer over to kick a box, right? Or to unplug it and plug it back in. And they have to understand kind of what they're doing and how you, potentially how you bring that back up without a network present. So, you know, there are a lot of factors that go into this integration beyond just a, you know, do I have a ruggedized platform that I can deploy and can withstand, you know, heat and some splash of water that's, you know, hitting the chassis.
But yeah, I don't. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, sorry.
You're good. All right. So we've gone from cloud to edge. That might be a good place to stop. It is coming up on the end of the year. I think next time we should talk about the trends that we saw emerging this year and what kind of the big news items were, just to kind of set the stage for all our you know, everyone's predictions articles for 2019.
Let's do it, baby.
Let's do it. So thanks, Matt, for taking the time.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you for hosting.
We'll catch up next time.
See you, buddy.
Listening to the Data Centric Podcast with Matt Kimble and Steve McDowell, available wherever fine podcasts are found. All content copyright 2018 by the creators. This has been a production of Bynum Ironworks.